We've always defined ourselves by the ability to overcome the impossible. And we count these moments.
The first ever to fly faster than the speed of sound.
These moments when we dared to aim higher, to break barriers, to reach for the stars.
76, you are go.
To make the unknown known. We count these moments as our proudest achievements.
Having fired the imagination of a generation.
But we've lost all that.
Pulls into port for the last time.
Or perhaps we've just forgotten that we are still pioneers, that we've barely begun, and that our greatest accomplishments cannot be behind us, because our destiny lies above us.
And we're back. On the boat.
In the darkest timeline.
See. Okay, so this episode is going to be different than our usual. If you are a long-time listener, which...
all of you are.
Yeah.
Our enormous fan base.
Yeah, our literal millions.
Yes. Yes.
If you're familiar with us and the episodes we've done, we did one two summers ago where we didn't make a list, which is our normal thing.
Mm-hmm.
We just did a full-on discussion on Man of Steel. And there was a movie that came out a couple months ago, and we felt that it deserved the same treatment.
It is a... The movies that we do this for... they have a few common denominators. The first is Christopher Nolan.
Well, second is their movies.
Number three, or at least it has been thus far, is their movies that divide this boat.
Yes.
That, on top of being probably the most highly anticipated amongst us usually.
Yeah,
as far as
I would say...
a common ground for anticipated movies.
Yeah.
Normally agree
on. And in the way that they're also... they're not just like a straightforward movie. Let's put it this way. Guardians of the Galaxy, we could not have done a full episode dissecting Guardians of the Galaxy.
It would not have been...
as interesting.
It would have turned into us singing 80s...
It would have just been like, hooked on a feeling, sing along.
Ooh, God, oh, God.
See, this one's already
turned. Yeah, this one's... yeah.
But,
and I would actually like to do this a couple more times a year than we do.
Yeah. Definitely.
They'll be shorter, obviously. Who knows how long this one will run.
We say they'll be shorter.
Smaller movies, smaller episodes.
Yeah, but there's like, I was just looking back on a couple movies that I saw this year thinking, you know, we could have done, like X-Men Days of Future Past, we could have done one for that, I think. Mm-hmm.
There's one movie.
Guardians, we could have done.
It just, I mean,
and then done a list with it because it wouldn't have gone past 30 minutes.
Yeah, Guardians was like a straightforward good movie.
Yeah.
Future Past was a complicated movie.
That's one that could have been discussed.
Yes.
Right.
Now, there's one movie that we all need to see before the floaties that I think would be an interesting one to discuss.
Yeah.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
Birdman.
Yes.
Or an unexpected...
Birdman.
Unexpected
Lesson in Virtue,
yeah,
or something
which
like...
which is also genius.
Because it's...
Napoleon Dynamite? Is that
yeah.
what
that's
it's
what
called? It's called The Happy Hands Club.
Yeah.
That is the name of this movie.
Just heads up, next month we will be... a couple of weeks ago we did our floaty episode for Best Music of 2014. There was a couple of movies that... we didn't get to see in theaters, but came out last year. That
a couple, I mean like 15.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That we all
for
felt
me.
Like we needed to see before we... mm-hmm. So we could do that list justice. And yeah, Birdman is... it's number one on the list of movies I've...
yeah. yet to
not
see.
Not seen from last year that I have been. Ever since I really saw the first trailer, I was like, this.
Like, the thing is, it intrigues me. But because there have been movies in the past that I've been like, I have to see, this is going to be a great movie. Mm-hmm. And then I watch them like, I hate this.
Yeah.
And I feel like Birdman has possibility to be that for me.
See, me too. Normally, it's pretty much always the same every year. I don't always agree with Oscar picks.
Mm-hmm.
And that one has got so much just noise.
But it seems to be so different than the usual. Because, it like, does. If you go back a couple years, like, we'll take The Artist was the front runner. I would say.
And, yeah. And the winner.
Yeah, it eventually won, but it was one of... What was the other movie that year?
Descendants was
the big one. Descendants. Those were the two that were racking up the award shows. But it didn't intrigue me the same way that Birdman did.
No, but
and
Birdman,
I also didn't go... I watched The Artist, and I didn't think going in, there's a possibility I could really hate this movie.
Right.
And there, I feel that way with Birdman.
Yeah, I feel like there's like a 50% chance... Birdman, for me, feels like a Beast of the Southern Wild. Well, I actually went in for that with high expectations, and if you have listened to this podcast at all, you know my hatred for that movie is never ending. It's up there with Tree of Life for movies I just hate. Like, good, like critically acclaimed movies are, and even like well-done artistic movies
in the
camp.
Tree of Life
they're in that camp.
Realm for you.
Yeah. And but I think Birdman has the potential to make that a trilogy, or it could be a movie that I love.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very divisive. Like it, like I was saying with The Artist, like going into it, I thought, you know, there's no way that I'm going to hate this movie.
Right. I might not love
but there's not going to be any way that I absolutely love it either. And I think that it could really go either way with Birdman.
But yeah... The Artist, though, was kind of... It was very straightforward.
Yeah, exactly.
You knew what it was.
This is not a silent movie.
I have
this
no idea.
So much
I don't know if I'm getting Spider-Man. I don't know if I'm getting... I just don't know.
Space I don't know.
Ghost.
Now, is it Spider-Man? Is it Black Swan?
It looks Black Swan.
It does look
Black
Swan.
It looks very Black Swan.
Fever Dream type of...
But I'm such a big fan of so much of the cast for this one, too, that makes me think differently. Because Emma Stone is my... crush, like that's like my celebrity crush, hands down.
Woman crush every day.
Yeah,
yeah.
Edward Norton is a big favorite of mine.
Excellent.
I like Michael Keaton. I'm not like a super fan, but
I'm just happy to see that he's still alive.
He's still making movies, and I'm proud for him.
He's in some of my favorite things.
I think he'll win an Oscar this year, so that's good.
Yeah. I've seen the guy who made it, Alejandro Iñárritu. I saw Babel.
Well, Babel looks like one of those movies that I would watch and would be in my Tree of Life camp.
It's a crash for me. Like, literally, the movie Crash.
Which,
it was
by the
like
way,
watching that.
Saw Crash pretty recently. Don't like it anymore. Liked it the first time I saw it.
Really?
No longer like Crash at all.
I have always just hated that.
So, that was an unnecessary tangent, and now...
Prepare yourselves, is what we're trying to say.
If we get through this episode and don't touch on Lincoln MKC commercials or True Detective at all, then I will be surprised.
It is a victory in I don't know what, self-control.
Yeah.
Self-control, we don't have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, we're sailors on the open sea, and this boat goes where she wants to.
That's right.
Very quickly, too.
Yeah. Yes. She's a little... Okay. What's the word for a really fast boat?
Swift.
She's a speedboat. That's the word I'm looking for. A speedboat. Okay.
Okay, so have we actually said what the movie is now?
I think we did.
No.
We just said Nolan.
It's Interstellar.
Yeah.
It's Interstellar. Let's...
It was, I would say, general consensus of the movies that we knew were coming out last year at just the public at large. I think that Interstellar was either at the top or close to the top for everybody.
And for the three of us, a collective most hyped. If it wasn't number one on each individual list, which it pretty much was, close enough.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was.
It was, like, tied for number one for me,
like,
with a few pet projects.
I went back recently and listened to some of our catalog, and when the news first broke that Nolan was directing this...
We all died.
We talked about it on air, and it was just like this...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Matthew McConaughey? Is it, because it was still at that point where McConaughey had not quite broken the barrier.
The reconnaissance was not in its full...
in the full swing, but yeah. It is now. But yeah, it was right after... It was the episode, I believe, where I talked about Mud. Which we haven't had an episode where John David has talked about Mud.
It's one of my favorite movies. That's enough.
Yep. And Colby still has not seen Mud.
I haven't seen it.
He would love it.
It's on Netflix. Go see Mud. Okay, please. So Interstellar. what we're going to do is we're going to... I'll go ahead and give you the layout. We're going to each one of us here give our letter grade for the movie. A quick little review, each of us, and then we're going to discuss each other's review for a little while, and then it will become a very different episode. And we will give you fair warning, because there are spoilers that will be discussed
here. We cannot have this episode without spoilers.
No, it will be 10 minutes long.
And I feel as though I should go...
And it's already 9 minutes and 50 seconds.
I feel as though I should go last.
Yes.
Okay.
But yeah, we will give you... Don't stop listening now. If you haven't seen it yet, do not stop listening now. We will tell you when to quit listening.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
But at that point, you need to take the headphones out.
Okay. And yeah, this is not a movie you want spoiled.
No.
And it's also a movie where us talking about it can't quite spoil it. Yeah. Because it's
true.
Your wildest dreams couldn't quite.
No.
We're already giving a lot away.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, so
fun fact.
Colby, go ahead.
When Leonardo DiCaprio wakes up in Limbo and Inception, he is in the film Interstellar.
We just spoiled Inception. So
this is a sequel to Interstellar. Congratulations.
Yeah. Okay, so Colby, you start, and then I'll go, and then John David. We have no notes. None.
None.
We're usually pretty good about having some notes down.
Nope.
No, nothing. We're not. Yeah. I'm not.
I am. Yeah.
Okay. I guess I saw it twice. Mm-hmm. Upon initial viewing, I loved it. But upon the second viewing, I loved it. So,
a twist.
All around, this is it's everything I expected. Chris Nolan is my favorite director. The reconnaissance definitely for me just pretty much ascended into space at this point.
It is atmosphere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Out of this world.
I mean. And the movie is just such a, I guess, emotional and mind or thought provoking, I guess, experience. I mean, I could actually smell the psychosphere. And
psychosphere. It's like a memory.
Yeah, I loved everything about it. I didn't have a problem with it. I guess we'll discuss later. The part we'll discuss later, it threw me. To begin with, but it was very cool. And that's all I have to say about that without spoiling it.
Letter grade. Just say it.
A+.
Yeah.
Whatever. One of those.
Okay. All right. So I saw this movie twice in theaters, both times with Colby.
Yep.
We went opening night and saw it in IMAX. Please, for the love of God, if you have the opportunity.
I did also see it in IMAX.
Actually,
don't see it if you're not going to see it in IMAX. Go over to an IMAX theater, put in your DVD once it comes out. But that is the way to watch this film.
Yeah,
continue.
First time I saw it, I don't know how else to explain it other than it was a roller coaster. of a lot of things, emotion being one of them. It pulls you in a lot of different directions. Emotionally.
Definitely.
I loved it. But then again, you got Christopher Nolan, my favorite director. I think collectively, can we just say he's just kind of
He's the boat's favorite director.
Yeah. Working.
I can't quite say necessarily, but I it's also hard for me to have a definitive favorite director. Mm-hmm. He's in the list of favorite directors for me. So yeah, we can definitely say he's the collective.
So yeah, you got my favorite director. You've got McConaughey, who has, like we have touched upon before, he's my favorite actor at this moment, anything he sees, I'm in. I mean, anything he's in, I'll see. Yeah. Like, I'm in on it.
He sees. Matthew McConaughey sees all of Zach's movies.
Yes, he does.
And that's
yes.
the point of
I made a movie when I was young called Teen Detectives, and he actually saw it. Yeah, optioned it.
Here was another one called Riding Christmas Cool.
Riding Christmas Cool. That is not make that movie.
Favorite film.
I was in.
Yeah, he was a star.
Star is loosely. I was like Forrest Gump in those scenes where they just kind of photoshopped him in.
Okay.
I went to see that movie twice.
I have yet to see Saving Christmas Cool. Riding Christmas Cool.
It played in the San Antonio Film Festival.
Yes,
where it was the big winner.
It
go ahead.
Won the jury prize for Christian movie of the hour. Okay, yeah, but so you got two of my favorite things there, and then you throw in Anne Hathaway, who is, she's just the most beautiful woman in the world to me. I don't know why. Like, she is, her and Rachel McAdams are just the two prettiest women to me.
I'm not
Jessica
really
Chastain,
disagree with you there.
Who I like a lot. She's always good. Topher Grace
was my favorite little cameo of the movie.
Nice film time.
Yeah. And another actor, big name actor, makes an appearance, but that will be covered in spoilers. But he's also one of my favorites. Okay. So you've just got a whole lot of ingredients that are my favorite, and you put them all together, and sometimes you come up with a crap pie, like when you just mix Skittles and M&M's and your Twizzlers, your favorite things all together. It's just garbage whenever it all...
Together.
Yeah. But for me, this did work.
Sometimes you end up with, like, Hershey pie.
Yeah. You end up with a cookies and cream ice cream cake.
I like that. I like that analogy. Yeah. If Christopher Nolan was a chef and Jonathan Nolan was his assistant...
But was his sous chef.
sous chef. And you combine all these ingredients, sprinkle a little Michael Caine wisdom in there.
Yes, he's another thing.
I think
that
when Michael Caine dies, Christopher Nolan will also die. I think their souls are
a little piece. He'll make the Michael Caine story.
Yeah. I think he's got him pre-recorded hologram and stuff. Like, just
I think Michael Caine's dead.
First
and it's been happening for a while. Does Michael Caine make not sci-fi movies anymore? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Do you count, what was that movie about the magicians?
Prestige?
That was close enough to a sci-fi movie. Now You See Me.
Now You See Me.
Close enough to a sci-fi movie.
Okay, yeah.
Close enough.
Okay, then no, like, he doesn't make
general,
any...
general movies of that nature. Okay, so what's your letter grade?
I give it an A+. Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm going to be unpopular in this episode. Let me start out by saying this. When through the large majority of Interstellar, I was like, is this my new favorite movie? Is this the greatest thing you've ever seen? Maybe. I mean, I was blown away. It was like Gravity with a plot. Yes. And nothing like Gravity at all, actually. I heard somebody compare it to Gravity, and I was like, I'm going to punch you.
Interstellar.
It's like Gravity and Interstellar do both take place in space.
It is.
Congratulations.
Yeah. So surprisingly
enough,
you
figured that out.
Like, the Matthew McConaughey version of these space movies had less howling.
Anyway, acting's blowing me away. Visuals are blowing me away. Storytelling in general is blowing me away. And then, there comes a point in the movie... I'm not going to give anything away, but I will say the movie makes a narrative leap that I thought was very problematic, and it for me it still has a little bit to do. Okay, I'll say this, and then we'll get into this more. I went and saw this with my good friend Aaron Carpenter.
Bad decision.
Good. Well, we felt the same way about the movie.
That's what I'm saying. Like, so, you went and saw it with somebody who.
Is a natural cynic.
And see,
mutually
Aaron,
agree. Mutually agree.
Yeah,
I love Aaron Carpenter. Let me just go ahead. I love you, Aaron Carpenter. You're one of my best good buddies. But yeah, you are a natural cynic.
Yeah.
No, he that's is. The reason yes. I like it.
It is true. It's true.
It's fun to meet somebody like
okay,
that.
I will say this, though. He and I, we were in... It's Blue Moon Barbecue. I don't remember. In Dothan. That barbecue place in Dothan.
Yes.
And we're eating. And he and I get into a discussion about the theory of time presented in Interstellar that entered us... That ended up in, like, him angry. Like, it became, like, a heated discussion. Number one, like... I'm an English major. He's a history major. So we felt really smart, and we sounded really smart, and I appreciate that, Christopher Nolan, for doing that for us, because we sounded like two physicists, like, going back and forth.
That's what I would like to... That's probably my favorite thing about this movie, is even if you didn't like it, you had to think about it.
You had to... Yes. I appreciate that, too. It's a thought-provoking film. So, like, for the first, I don't know, 2 hours of the movie... Like, I'm with them. I'm giving it the highest grade. But then I just still think it ends up being really problematic in the storytelling, which is your first duty as a filmmaker. Like, you cannot... No, because you cannot do anything else without effective storytelling. No. You can do creative storytelling.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be straightforward, but it's like this. I can get behind your and when you create your universe, I can believe whatever, but you have to explain to me the rules of your universe, and the rules of this universe in the film are not fully explained. After, like, further analysis, I get some things, but I still hold strongly to, okay, Inception is a prime example. I get mad at people who are like, Inception didn't make sense. I'm like, pay attention to the movie and Inception makes sense.
Yeah.
Interstellar, on the other hand, though, takes, like, you have to infer too much. And then still, all those inferences don't line up. There's still too many things to me you have to take for granted for everything to end up in the conclusion. And for that reason, the movie drops significantly for me. It's really hard for me to give it a letter grade, because we're talking like an A+ in so many aspects, and then, I mean, like a C in the storytelling department. It, because of the end, it was so frustrating. So, yeah. That's my unpopular opinion.
My argument would be that explaining everything is something that almost gets on my nerves a lot of times now.
The challenge of the movie, and of a Christopher Nolan movie, of what he does, the challenge of his movies is, because he has such complicated stories, to let them unfold naturally in a way the audience can understand without having to go through and explain every detail, which I thought he did really well with Inception, in which he did not as well with Interstellar. Now, Interstellar is like top 5 most ambitious movies ever made by any human, if not the number one. I give him some leeway. I still love Christopher Nolan, and I'm going to go back and watch this movie again. I've seen it once, given it lots of thought, but seen it once. I need to see it again, where I can essentially just fast forward to the last hour.
Yeah, basically, so you can know what you know and then do it again.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, because it is very complicated. I like to think that with Nolan's movies, it gets a little worse every time. Like, Memento was Algebra 1, Inception was Calculus.
You mean it gets a little harder every...
Or a little harder, yes. Yeah. Okay. You advance through the Nolan school system.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, okay, Memento is another brilliant example of a movie that is so complicated when you're watching it. And then in the final scene, light bulb. The ultimate, more than any movie I've ever seen, except maybe, like, random, The Illusionist with Edward Norton. I love that movie. Two just, like, huge light bulb moments. Interstellar tried to give me a light bulb moment, but that light bulb was dim. It was like a 12-watt light bulb.
And I agree that what I like about this, I guess, this debate is that I don't think either side is wrong on this.
Agreed. Agreed. 100% agreed.
I think that there were leaps you had to make. There were coincidences you had to accept. And I think if you accept it, you love the whole film, and if you think it's a little too much, then but it's opinions. It's not really not any factual debate to facts to debate in this movie.
Mm-hmm. But let's quickly conclude there. Things we can all agree on. It is like a masterclass in filmmaking. Yes. It is a masterclass in special effects. And, well, I'd say it's a masterclass in acting. I mean, it's not a movie that's about the acting, but brilliant performances.
All the way around.
And also, let me just say this. A thought just occurred to me. You know the other time that we had problems with narrative leaps in a Christopher Nolan movie? Dark Knight Rises. Mm. Just kind of occurred to me.
Yeah.
In a different way, but I went back and rewatched,
I've rewatched it, and there's some things that I'm like,
I don't know how Batman got back to Gotham City.
I do agree with that, but
like overnight.
But I trust Nolan that I don't know that he did
also,
it overnight.
Okay,
I don't know.
The other thing. With Dark Knight Rises, I don't care.
Yeah.
Because I'm along for the ride.
Yeah.
You can't just be along for the ride with Interstellar. It doesn't let you just be along for the ride. At least for me, I couldn't be. Yeah, and that was the problem.
I think he was kind of like...
that. Like, I got mad at people who overthought Dark Knight Rises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't have, but I did. But this one, like... you're meant to overthink it. You have to... It's such a thought-provoking movie, and it took away... Okay, so that's that.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it is one... it's a fantastically made film. Just, you'll see some things in this that you never thought were possible. Some of the other worlds and things like that you see on screen are just...
Amazing.
And then some of the shots that you see in space are so beautiful. And it puts Gravity to shame, in my opinion, on that. Just some of the shots that you see in space, and there's just the little piano playing.
Absolutely.
The only thing I'd say with Gravity is I saw it in IMAX 3D.
I didn't
see it in IMAX 3D.
I saw it in IMAX 3D, and I, like, almost cried.
Yeah.
But Gravity was my favorite movie of the year, so, you know.
And this, and I guess the I'm not trying to take anything away from Gravity. It looks amazing. But we're talking about different scales.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you're talking about with Interstellar, you're talking about the entire universe. And with Gravity, you're talking about an isolated area of space, as weird as that sounds when you're talking about Gravity. But
I will say, overall, Interstellar is prettier.
But you have to look at directors. Mm-hmm. Christopher Nolan hates CGI.
Yeah.
Absolutely hates it. And that's what I noticed in Gravity. You know, when Sandra Bullock's flying through space, she's animated. When Matthew McConaughey's in a spacesuit, he's in a spacesuit.
Yeah.
And that's... He doesn't like to do that. He likes to make it look as real as possible.
He literally built every set that was possible to be built for this film. Like, he said, I want as little CGI... Right. As we can possibly
He does the
which
same
with
all his
movies. Amazing.
They actually built the Batwing in Dark Knight Rises. They built a non-functional Batwing.
I was watching, they were on Graham Norton, which is a British talk show, and it was Matthew McConaughey and Anne Hathaway. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about Interstellar. And, you know, they're talking about a lot of the special effects and all this kind of... And they said that, you know, Christopher Nolan really doesn't like to use CGI. And he's like, well, then what were some of the things that you had to do? And she's like, well... something took a really long time. It was a lot of skill. We had to learn to, you know, walk slowly. Which is like, so, you know, give the effect of gravity. You know, you are like a suspended gravity. You have to do weird things like slowly lift your arm. It was hard.
Yeah, I also read, she did an interview, it may have been with Time Magazine, where they were shooting one of the scenes where they're in the space shuttle or one of the things. But they were doing this anti-gravity spin type of deal, almost like a ride at an amusement park.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Not.
Except for, like, you know...
Uh-huh.
It was, like, something that they actually use in training for astronauts, or used to use.
Yeah.
But, yeah, she's like, that made me so sick. That's something that you can tell in the performance. Like, they felt it. But now, you know, Sandra Bullock... It's almost hard not to compare this to Gravity just because they're the two big space movies of the last
years. Two big space movies that aren't like Michael Bay-ish.
That aren't Star Trek or Star Wars of the last.
that have some like ounce of realism, as unrealistic as they are.
Yeah.
Well, Gravity was pretty. Both of them.
Theoretically.
I mean, that is Interstellar a sci-fi movie? If you mean a movie that takes place in space and deals with like science, both
science and fiction, so yes.
Yeah. But it's not.
Gravity was also a sci-fi movie, right? In that way,
but they're not alien movies.
No,
no. Mm-hmm.
They all theoretically are in the realm of possibility.
Yeah.
I understand that some of Gravity's space stuff was off, but that movie was a metaphor. Take it as a metaphor, people.
Yeah, and now, I almost... this one kind of is, like, Christopher Nolan telling every other filmmaker out there, like, let's try to find the new horizon. Let's not just keep recycling the same garbage that we have been doing. Thank you,
Christopher.
Because now we're just living in the dust bowl of movies, the movie era.
Okay, but in all seriousness, because we were just talking before this about how good TV is. We were talking about like True Detective and other shows and stuff. And movies are garbage.
They really are.
I mean, like, and what's frustrating is the movies that I want to see don't come to theaters near me. And I like seeing movies in theaters. It is by far my preferred way to see a movie is in the theater.
Oh, yeah. Because that's still one of my favorite things to experience, period. Like, if I just had to put my top three things that I love to do and things that I will always enjoy doing is going to a college football game, actually going to the stadium, going to the movie theater, and then... driving with the windows down.
Yeah.
Ultimate frisbee.
It's like church it's kayaking movies.
I believe that if there was a way I could watch TV in an IMAX theater,
yes,
by all means,
Speaking
I would.
Speaking of which, you should be interested in this.
I know.
Yes. I read that. Yes.
I will be in Columbus, Georgia, next to an IMAX theater. And I will be there probably all three nights.
I will not.
That makes me very happy. But yeah, we've broken new territory on television, broken new ground, and it does not happen often in movie theaters now. You just get reboots and, you know, remakes and sequels that are unnecessary. And
I have this discussion with my family every Sunday about how what they watch is crap and what I watch is not.
I bet your mother loves this discussion.
And it's getting to the point where I see, you can clearly tell, TV and movies are expanding, but they're not really expanding.
Right.
They've crossed.
Because now, the big thing, places. Like, everybody loves to watch, like, Alaska fishermen
in the
hunting
Yemen.
In the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fishermen in the Yemen.
It's like, everybody wants to watch that. You get that, that is literally...
Those kinds of
shows are literally recycled.
Literally. Okay.
And
then
you get shows like True Detective on the other spectrum that really provoke thought. And I had people ask me, especially with like Justified ending this season, why do we want to end Justified? And I was like, here's the difference. You watch CSI, who's only in it for the money.
Yeah.
I watch Justified and other things like that that do it for the artistic
expression. It's for the story.
Yeah, they're in it
telling the story.
The story has... It was the same thing with Sons of Anarchy.
Right.
They could have made 50 seasons.
Like, some of the
same
best shows...
Breaking Bad,
yeah,
all
yeah.
those. They
some of the best shows
ran.
On television end quickly, and it's not because of ratings. It's because they say, this story is done.
Right.
And when it's done, it's done. Not that... By no means am I a fan of this show, an advocate of this show at all. This show drives me insane. But I have a little respect that Glee is ending. Because, like...
It's just two seasons, like, too late.
But this is still a super heavily watched show. I have a little respect for Ryan Murphy just saying, like, okay, we're beating a dead horse. Mm-hmm. This is done. And because if you've seen an episode... I saw, like, one season 5 episode or something. I was at somebody's house and it was on TV. It was the worst garbage
I've ever, and I was a fan of season one.
Yeah,
and it is garbage.
That's, and I'm
but so I have respect that they're pulling the plug.
Yeah, and it's another thing. Like we've talked Sherlock. Like that's another reason I love Sherlock is mm-hmm. is because they're not on a timetable really.
It's
they're
my
like
favorite way to watch a TV well, show.
Yeah, and they're like their showrunners are like, we'll make new episodes when we feel like we have stories that are up to par.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, like we're not just because. They want us to go, the network wants us to go ahead and pump out 3 episodes a year. That doesn't mean that we're going to do it. Like, I like that. You could tell that they take their time with it. And it's the set, like, if we're talking about, we'll use Transformers for an example. Every 2 years, it seems like a Transformers movie comes out.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was really good. I don't even know if it was, I enjoyed the first one a lot.
It was fun.
It was fun.
I had a good time.
And I think if they would have took 4 years in between, they could have done another one the same, possibly the same, I don't know.
No, just, you had a fun movie. Okay, here's the deal. I don't blame them for making a second one. I don't blame them. Because it's like, in theory, and I, fun fact, I have never seen Transformers 2 or 3. I've seen 1 and 4. 4, I can't talk about it.
Well, it's, when series hit that point, Fast and the Furious is the primest of examples.
Yeah.
If you're gonna make the movie, keep making the movie. I don't want you to lose Shia LaBeouf and then throw in Mark Wahlberg because everybody loves Mark Wahlberg. I want you to do the story the right way, end it
right,
and then let it be.
And see,
then in 100 years they can remake it. And then
the Fast and the Furious, they can make 100. I'll watch every one of them. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you, like, this is the best series ever, because it's not. It's just, it's like, I really enjoy eating birthday cake, but I don't eat it every single day. And like,
once a year, like Fast and the Furious.
Yeah,
or
for every single meal. Like,
well,
no.
There are TV shows and there are movies that I like and that get me by. But, like, I also eat McChickens more often than I should because they sustain me and they're there and they exist. And they're easily accessible.
And they're
tasty.
For the price, they taste
for a
okay.
dollar, no, it doesn't bother me. I'll pay a dollar for a McChicken.
That's like the thing. Well, you with the Fast series is like me with, say, the Pirates of the Caribbean series.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch it because you're going to get Johnny Depp being Jack Sparrow.
Right.
Yeah.
You're going to get it. He's always going to be good at it. There's no... Mm-hmm. I mean, that's always going to be a good portion of the movie. The story may suck, but you're going to get...
But bringing this back full circle...
Because time is a flat circle.
Time is a flat circle.
I can smell the sausage.
Someone once told me that.
Well, we've already hit True Detective. Okay, we hit the Lincoln commercials. So, it'll be good.
Bringing this full circle. I gained so much respect for Christopher Nolan whenever he ended... The Dark Knight series.
Yes, me too.
With The Dark Knight Rises.
Me too.
Because he had a story to tell. He told the story. There are literally hundreds of other Batman villains that you could have used
to
make more movies.
Christopher Nolan could make infinite Batman movies.
And,
they would always
and I would watch every single one of them.
Midnight.
And you know who I've lost some respect for? And it pains me to say this. It hurts me to say this. But they're just, I mean, Peter Jackson.
Dude. Yeah, I feel the same way.
And you, again, if you've listened to the show at all, you know that I am a Lord of the Rings fanboy to the death. Favorite movies ever. Nothing.
They're up there.
And I believe that for me, for the rest of my life, nothing will compare. It's like when you find that one thing that you just know, like, this is my thing. That's me in the Lord of the Rings movies. And I want to like The Hobbit as much. I want to. And the pure fan of me, the pure I'm back in Middle Earth can. And I liked the last Hobbit movie. A lot of people didn't like it at all. I did. I liked it. But it was unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, no. The first movie in general was unnecessary.
Yeah.
It should have been 2 movies, but probably
at most. Like,
probably.
Two-hour movies.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It should have been 2 two-hour movies. And I don't want to sit in the theater for 4 hours, so I would appreciate 2 two-hour movies.
I don't know if y'all are aware, a YouTube user has edited all 3 movies into 1 four-hour movie.
Oh.
Yes, Lord.
That is what I'll watch.
Because that, no, that yes, is what yes. I will watch that,
that, that
now.
Would be one guy took all the time in the world to edit out three movies and make 1 4-hour movie.
I want to like send him a check. Mm-hmm. I'm so thankful.
I definitely, that's, I'll say I'll watch that one first because I haven't seen Smog or the third one.
The Smog is worth it.
And I know that. I know that I just have to make myself sit down and get ready for a 3-hour movie.
Smog is, it's not even 3 hours. Smog wins.
I know it.
Watch it just for the Ed Sheeran song in the credits. But this one, it was like, I mean, I think the last 45 minutes of the movie had about 3 lines of dialogue, and it was all unnecessary CGI battle sequences, and that hurt me.
So yeah, you can appreciate the leap that Nolan took making this film.
I can.
Because he said, I'm not going to stick to the norm here. It's time for us to find some new ground. And I don't think that anyone who watches this movie can say that he didn't attempt it. You may not think that he accomplished what he set out to do, or that he did it as well as he has done in the past when it comes to his other movies, like we said, Memento or Inception, or even just how he took such a leap with the comic book franchise, the superhero movie genre, and then changed the look of those forever.
Uh-huh. That the leap, I mean, it would have been the easiest thing in the world for Nolan to say, aliens are the reason this stuff's happening in this movie. Here's your movie.
So, okay, so I think this brings us to the spoiler section.
We're going to take a break.
Spoilers from here on out.
When we come back, it is full-on spoiler.
Spoiler city.
There are more spoiler we in have the rest of this episode than any of the Fast
on the boat.
Furious movies. Just, yes. Yeah, all spoiler. So,
okay.
We...
Also explicit.
No.
Uncensored and uncut. The Boat Podcast. We'll be back. Spoiler alert, Matt Damon is in Interstellar.
What? Born fanboys around the world.
All right, and that concludes today's episode of The
Let me quickly say it.
Well, basically what Nolan is saying is that Matt Damon is going to save us from ourselves.
Turns out that Matt Damon is an agent sent to space.
Yes.
But he's sent to space because he was accused of trying to destroy the planet through a environmental warfare plot. Yeah.
Fracking.
Fracking. He was fracking. It was fracking. What?
Robin Williams is also his teacher.
In heaven.
Quantum physics.
Quantum physics. Seizing the day. And
by the way, time. I just have to quickly take a moment. The other day, a student was standing on the desk, and I was able to tell him, excuse me, this is not Dead Poets Society. Nobody understood the reference.
Nobody at that school has seen
it. But I was proud of myself.
You could have said, excuse me, this is not The Graduate. That's the old cat in my cat.
Speaking of dramatic poetry reading, I did think it was a little bit heavy handed. The do not go gentle into that kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Well, when I saw it in the trailer, I was like, okay, that's effective for the trailer. Did not think it would be in the movie.
Well, okay, also, hashtag overused poem.
Yeah.
Hashtag overused poem. Hashtag audiobook that needs to be released. Michael Caine reads poetry.
Michael Caine famous reads the 1102 reading list.
And hashtag looking for Alaska, use that poem more effectively. But
yes.
Anyway, one day we'll do a John Green
episode. Okay, so like we said, Matt Damon is in this movie.
Matt Damon is my favorite part of this movie.
Whoa.
That whole scene with him, I thought it was brilliant.
Oh, it was probably my second.
Because he was, Okay, we got to spoil
which,
this.
Which scene are we talking about? Because
I mean, just the whole part with him in it, but particularly the end of him in it.
Go ahead.
Okay, we got to spoil this. So they're on the spaceship. If you don't if you don't know the plot to Interstellar, let's fill you in a little bit. Okay. But though you should not be listening.
They are in space.
We are going to jump in the middle of this plot because you don't even know how they get to space yet.
So like they go to space because the Earth is dying and they're trying to find another planet for us all to go to.
Yes.
And they do throw suit. They do so through wormholes. Yes. Well, they go through a wormhole and end up in this other...
They've sent 10 previous scientists to 10 different planets in this wormhole.
One of them is crazy Matt Damon.
One of them is Matt Damon. So they go visit Matt Damon because they know he's still... Or they believe he's still alive. And they believe there's a percentage, a good percentage, that his planet will support us.
Because that's the readings that he sent. Right.
Do you know why they think that? Because he's a liar.
Yeah.
He's lying a scared, coward liar.
Piece of garbage, man.
And I
know why Jimmy Kimmel hates you now. I get it.
And I think that he possibly deserved a supporting actor nomination.
He was really good.
He was
really
good.
I'm glad he didn't get one because it would spoil the movie for some people.
It would. It would. But he was really good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was one of the most effective scenes in the movie is when they land on his planet and they... When they get there, he's in cryogenic sleep, which I don't have time to explain that. So
it's when you go to sleep for a long time but stay alive.
So they wake him up, and he... Oh, good Lord. Okay. Time moved there. They called the original 10 the Lazarus missions because...
Okay.
Obvious reasons. So they go to his planet and they go in his little space camp that he has set up, which another movie that you
this
need to see about space.
But it's because we started in the middle with one of the most pivotal plot points of the whole thing, and now we're having to backtrack too.
We told you not to keep listening if you hadn't seen
Matt
it.
Matt Damon's
so
in this movie. So there was a guy named Jesus.
Okay? Let's backtrack 2,000 years. And so anyways, they wake him up. And obviously, at some point over the last however many years he's been on this planet, he has realized that there is a strong, strong possibility he will never, ever see anyone else again.
Right.
And so when they wake him up, he comes up out of the sleep and just starts... crying, and it was, oh my god!
Like he almost cry with him.
Just literally, the sight of a human being brought him to tears.
You definitely feel like, okay, what would I do if I was on a planet by myself for 10, 20, 30 years?
Yeah.
And that scene, my favorite Matt Damon scene of that movie, which was also equally as powerful to me, or probably the most powerful of the whole thing, is called... Don't dock.
Yeah, oh my god.
Don't dock the ship, man.
Oh my gosh.
I was having a panic attack in the theater. Before we get to that, can we finish out the Matt Damon on the planet?
So Matt Damon's awoken from his cryogenic sleep. He's
need
crying.
A great song played. Wake up from your slumber.
Open up your eyes.
Basically, what I'm trying to remember is, okay, we have to backtrack a little bit more to fill you in on the plot. There is a plan A and a plan B. Plan A is to move everybody from Earth that's still alive to the new planet. Plan B...
To a new planet, but you don't know which one.
But to do so, they have to get a theory where they can manipulate gravity.
Right. Because there's a big space station, all this good stuff.
Which they
you'll
only
know if
make
you watch the movie.
Marginally clear in
true.
The film.
True.
Okay.
I don't know that there is a way to make it completely clear.
I think they should have said... We need to manipulate gravity.
I think he kind of, because they're kind of like, well, how do we get everybody to the planet? They got that point in the writing process, and Chris Nolan's kind of like, I don't know.
And then they called Kip Thorne, and he's like, yo, I deal with wormholes.
He's like,
I'm not like a gravity dude.
Well, theoretically, if you manipulate gravity, hey, hangs up the phone, manipulate gravity. So, we get to that point. So Matt Damon has his own, and then we got to backtrack again. There's a robot named Tars.
My favorite part of the movie,
which is one of Tars.
He deserved a Best Supporting Actor nomination.
So there's this robot named Tars. They're not typical robots. They're shaped like big boxes. And they move. Cool. They're super cool.
So cool.
And
top five movie robots is a list that we'll have to make.
Oh, definitely. iRobot wins. But okay, so Tars. No. You've got Tars, right, and then you've got this one. I know the guy who did the voice for Matt Damon. No, it wasn't Matt Damon's Tars. Matt Damon's Tars is dead.
Yeah,
we'll say that. But he doesn't. He explains. He tells the new people that have arrived on the planet that something malfunctioned. He had to do something to survive. Well, at this point, Matt Damon is going to take Matthew McConaughey on this walk over the planet and show him why he thinks this is the proper planet for us to move to.
Which, you know, hindsight 2020.
Oh.
Why that makes a whole lot of sense doesn't, because you're gonna take the pilot around to show him why the planet's inhabitable and not, you know, the biologist who's on the mission.
Uh-huh. Also, the planet looks like Siberia.
Yeah, it is ice.
It is like, all ice. I think
they were
mountains.
In Siberia when they filmed this, or space.
Mm-hmm. No, they did it
in space.
Greenland.
They went.
Where did they go? They did it on
probably
location
Greenland.
Somewhere.
Pluto.
Yeah. You heard what they did to Pluto?
You heard about Pluto? That's messed up, right? Yeah. So, let's see. Matt Damon and Matthew McConaughey go for a walk. I don't remember his name. He's the other scientist that's with them. Kind of hangs
guy.
The black scientist. The black. I think he was the physicist of the group, I believe.
He
stays at Matt Damon's little cryogenic base or whatever, and Anne Hathaway and he's not with us anymore at this movie in the part. Funky Beard, Wes Bentley.
Senna.
Yeah. Yes.
No, not Senna. That's the stylist. He's Funky Beard from The Hunger Games.
Funky Beard, Wes Bentley.
He's the game planner dude from Hunger Games Numero Uno.
Wes Bentley, who I like him a lot. But they get back in the little spaceship.
He's dead because of stupid
Anne Hathaway.
we'll get back to that point when we start talking about favorite scenes again later on. But so now Matt Damon and McConaughey are on a walk. Black scientist is stuck at the base. He's looking at the disabled Tars that Matt Damon had. And slowly but surely, we start uncovering that the Tars was disabled because of something else. We don't know. It's not Matt Damon's story is not adding up at this point.
Yeah.
So they
And we know that, but
yeah,
they
we,
don't.
Yeah, we know it, but Matthew McConaughey, who is walking with Bourne, does not know what's going on. So they get to the edge of this cliff. Matthew McConaughey is kind of talking about stuff and
going to see his kid.
Yeah,
he's like, time is a flat circle.
Smelling psychosis.
Matt Damon at that point removes his communications chip from Matthew McConaughey's helmet.
Yes,
and throws it. I can't explain it to you, but the music in this scene brings you to the most tense point.
Like
before the next tense point in the movie.
The constant in this movie is that you think, like, I cannot handle another tense scene. And it's like, too bad. By the end of it, like, you're sore the next
you're
day.
You're bludgeoned into submission
so
by
tense.
Hans Zimmer's score. Just,
oh, yeah.
It is one of... For it not to be a horror movie, it's one of the most technically a thriller. It's one of the most tense movies I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it
and
is.
And that, the Matt Damon walking with McConaughey scene, it cuts back to all three of the little groups or whatever between this whole walk. And pretty much, once you hear the music really come into the background, you're thinking to yourself, oh no, oh no, this is not going to be good at all. And it's not. So it turns out Matthew McConaughey gets kind of kicked down to the bottom of this little mountain part thing. Like, and Vorn, he's not really going along with the plan anymore.
Yeah, no, he just kind of is going to leave McConaughey for dead.
And in fact, what's so brilliant to me, one of the reasons I love Matt Damon in the movie, and you hate his character, of course, but it's like as a writer, you're so glad that somebody just had some sense when they're creating character. Because Matt Damon, he even says, he's like, I'm so sorry. I'm too much of a coward to sit here and watch you die.
Yeah.
Like, sincerely, apologetically, he's not your typical movie bad guy in any shape. It really is this person. Like, you can sympathize because he's been so worn down by being alone that he's crazy.
Yeah,
and he's willing to do whatever he has to do to see people again.
And that, and it's funny because in a movie where you're positive everybody's a good guy and the villain is the earth and you're trying to get to this, and then they actually
the
villain is time and dust and all that good stuff, and then they actually throw in a bad guy at this point. If it would have been Tom Hardy in a Bane outfit, that would have been
acceptable. I'd have been okay. If Bane showed up.
That's one of the reasons that I like the fact that they didn't market this film as, you know, they didn't use Matt Damon to market this film.
Like
if you didn't do your research, you would not have known.
I assumed that's where he was by that point in the movie, because I knew he was in it, so I was like, maybe this will be Matt Damon, and it was, but... Yeah, I like that you never saw him in a preview. I thought that was really brilliant.
Because I had read an interview with Matt Damon probably a year ago where he was talking about the filming of it, and it was the filming of Interstellar, and he was like, everybody on here is just giving knockout performances. This is going to be a fantastic film. But then the trailer came out, and then the posters came out, and the marketing plan came out, and you didn't see him, and I thought Matt Damon got cut from this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap.
It was a Shailene Woodley Spider-Man 2 all over again.
Yeah, I was...
Shailene Woodley was in Spider-Man
She was supposed
2.
To be Mary Jane.
Yeah, they filmed her as Mary Jane.
Okay, see, I thought...
It, which was
but
anyway,
I do.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's kind of... They did that. The only other person I know who does that actively is Kevin Spacey in his movies.
Yes.
If he's not got the top billing and he's got a big part in the movie with a twist, he doesn't want you to know that from the get-go.
There's one in particular. And
two
we
in particular.
He was billed on the second one.
Yeah.
Not a clue.
But not as the top. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, but anyways, yeah, that was genius how they did not use him to like, hey, come watch this movie because you've got Matt Damon. But yeah, because if they had, then it would have been...
You could have ruined the surprise.
Yeah.
It would have ruined the surprise.
It was a very cool surprise.
And also, when you first meet him, for me, I mean, I just did not think it was going to turn out.
They described him, they were like, I think it was Anne Hathaway who said, he's the best of us. He was the first one to volunteer. Like, he is your all-American...
Mm-hmm.
Hero.
No, wait,
wasn't astronaut.
She talking about? I thought she was talking about the other dude.
No. The other dude was the guy that she was in love with, and they're
the
trying to decide which planet to go to, and McConaughey talks her into going to Matt Damon's planet.
Yeah. Okay. So.
Because he was the best of us.
Yes, it was. He's just like, he's a. And he's just this sad little man when he first comes out, and you feel, and you're like, oh, poor dude, he finally gets to see people. Like, you're really happy for him. And then Christopher Nolan.
Well, and you think, oh, he's the savior.
You fully believe like this is the place somehow.
That and
for the most part, except for the fact that I knew that we were only like an hour and a half into the movie.
Exactly.
But that's my way of thinking about it was like, okay, yeah, we got Matt Damon, but we're going to find out something's wrong with his planet. Matt Damon's just going to come back with him. He's going to be on
the
spaceship.
Yeah, me too. But Matt Damon's the devil.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Matt Damon's the devil.
So that was really cool. And it was... This whole set, I'm going to go back. This section spoils a lot of things. it was the opposite of what he did with Bane.
Yeah.
Dark Knight Rises. So, like.
True.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Nolan does things like this, and that's one reason why I like him, because, you know, he is smart. But yeah, okay, so now that we've spent another 30 minutes on Matt Damon. Let's actually get into
we've
covered a good chunk of that plot.
But okay, I think we need to get into the crux of where my problem arose and where The problem of the film, because again, we're assuming you've seen the movie, so I'm not gonna explain every detail of this.
Let's do favorite scene, and then we'll talk about the scene.
Okay.
That's cool. Yeah.
Down.
Okay.
You start.
My favorite scene of the movie was definitely... and it's a tough one, because the docking sequence, the second docking sequence, was... it was just crazy. Like, I read where at the screenings of this movie, like, people cried during the docking sequence. And I wanted to.
Yeah.
Because, it was that's the most tense thing I've seen in a long, long, long time. But my favorite scene as just a movie viewer was, those aren't mountains.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I think we have the same favorite scene then.
That was really cool. Go ahead.
Well, it was just... To describe it for you, since we're already in spoiler territory, they land on this planet that seemingly is all water. And it's all water. It's about knee-deep water. And they land, they're going to investigate, and they can't find the scientist who is supposed to be there.
And their GPS-like coordinates are saying... Mm-hmm. They're
right on top. Yeah. So Anne Hathaway and Wes Bentley go wading around in the water, and they find, like, these... remnants of a once built space something.
Yeah.
And they're kind of digging around through it, and they're pretty far away from the ship. And
Earth at this point, so they know that it's that ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can see these mountains in the background. And it's very pretty. It's only water and mountains. And you're just kind of like, this, I don't know how we're gonna inhabit this planet, but you know, it looks okay.
It's a very calming.
Oh yeah.
Scene, like it's just because it really is beautiful. You literally see water and the distant view of these beautiful mountains.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just very peaceful environment.
Yeah, and then so they're looking around. Anne Hathaway, I think she says something along the lines of, we may have to go closer to the mountains. And then it cuts to Matthew McConaughey looking out the window, and he says,
those aren't... Do you believe in ghosts, Marty? You believe in ghosts,
Marty? No, he says, those aren't mountains. And then everybody just goes, oh, crap.
And they're waves.
The
size of Earth.
Yeah. Yes. These ginormous, like, just... unimaginable tidal waves. And then you're like, oh, we already had a sense of time urgency. Yes. With the whole
okay
seconds
every
count
hour
for hours
that they're on this planet is 7 years.
Yeah. Yes.
On every hour, because
remember, we don't have time to explain relativity. No,
yeah.
Again, you watch
literally
the movie. Watch
we
the
do
movie.
Not have the time to yeah
right. So, and then at that point, now you've got time urgency. Okay, 7 years is going by every hour. Now there's this huge wave coming, and you've already... Well, no, nobody's died so far, I don't think.
No, but then his name is Seneca, not Cena.
Seneca. And then... Seneca. So Wes Bentley, Tars, and
also
Anne Hathaway are out there. Tars has to carry Anne Hathaway because she's stupid and won't listen to Matthew McConaughey.
She needs to get the data.
Yeah.
I think the data does help them in
well, at
fairness.
This point, you obviously realize that this place is not habitable.
We can't live here anymore. Yeah. There are literally 1,000-foot tidal waves. And so...
She's trying to find her man crush Monday.
Yeah. At this point, Tars makes this really cool, like, I don't know... Kind
he just
of
carries her with his weird
form.
Arm.
Yeah.
It was a very, very
I don't
weird.
Know.
It was cool.
I know that I want a Tars.
I do.
It's so cool.
I want my own personal Tars.
It would carry me everywhere.
Yeah, and then pretty much he gets Anne Hathaway back to the ship in time for them to take off, and Wes Bentley doesn't make it back.
Seneca gotta go.
And then, just when you think they're off the planet, they get hit by the flipping tidal wave. And then they ride it like a boat. It was really weird, but it was awesome to look at. And then they finally get off. But in...
And it's been like
they're mad.
Years.
Yeah, they're mad because that caused them to delay, because it has to drain the water, so it takes like another 2 or 3 hours, and now they've wasted so much time.
And
but that does add to the plot heavily.
When they get back, the guy who's still on the ship is like, I've waited 20 years for you. I have a beer.
Where have you been?
Which,
yeah.
Out of
that's
level.
My fa- yeah, I love that.
Out of level.
When I crap you. I just wish it would have been Mike Epps in that part. Yeah.
Is your favorite scene?
I want Tracy Morgan.
Yeah. Is your favorite scene Flipboard?
No. Yeah. My favorite scene is every time McConaughey says, "Come on, Slick." But no. Actually, my favorite scene... okay, I'll go a different route. Now you've got the visually stunning, I'm going to go with the emotionally gripping.
Okay.
Once they... Once they get back to the ship, they then realize, like he says, it's been 20 years. And so on their spaceship, they can receive videos via Skype type of way from Earth. And McConaughey sits down in a chair and he... watches his kids or watching his daughter still refuses to speak to him, but he watches his son grow up essentially just
through these videos that they make for him,
and like they record to him over let's just say he records one every 2 years or something. He watches these and he is just a wreck.
Well, but it shows him in because it's like the son's like, "You're a grandpa." Yeah. And then in the next few videos, he's like, "After the baby died." It's and you see Matthew McConaughey's reaction to all this.
He tells him that, Matthew McConaughey's father-in-law has passed away and they buried him out beside McConaughey's wife because he left his kids with his father-in-law. But it was a powerful, powerful scene.
Another scene, not my favorite. Both of what you said, I like better than this scene. But another scene that I did think was really effective and why I thought Anne Hathaway was so good in this movie is the scene where they are discussing which planet to go to.
Yeah.
And she goes into this weird theory, which is like crazy. And another way that I'm like, okay, Nolan, okay. But it's cool in the scene where they talk about love.
Yeah.
And where she's, because he's like, "You just want to go to this planet because you love her and there's no science behind..." Or because you love him and there's no science behind love. And she's like, "You don't know that."
Yeah.
You know, love cannot be explained by science.
Love transcends
and in
time
this movie,
and space.
Is all about love.
Okay,
that's the message of the...
Okay, this... All right, I think this is a good springboard into... Because there's another... They're like... At one point, I'm like, are they trying to say that, love is the element that can cut through gravity? Was love the missing element to the equation? I know it wasn't.
Love is the thing that can't be explained. And I get that, because it can't be.
No.
Like, even though you're in a different time, and a different...
That's...
On the other side of the universe, maybe, you still love this... person or this something.
So the person that Matthew loves is Jessica Chastain, who is his daughter.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's where the movie takes a turn for the what the crap. So
Murphy's Law.
Okay. So at one point they're trying to get away from from Matt Damon's planet? I don't remember. At some point, they're trying to get away from somewhere. And they are gonna send part of the ship off into a black hole because they need to get rid of the weight.
Yeah.
But then, for some reason I don't remember right now, Matthew McConaughey ends up also having to go into the black hole.
What they're gonna their plan is they're gonna slingshot around this black hole and land. Yeah.
I thought it was the first planet. The slingshot.
Okay. They're going to this planet.
So
there's a black hole near it.
They need to get away from the black hole.
They need to dump a little weight because they're running out of fuel.
Well, and because Matt Damon destroyed part of the ship.
The docking scene.
The docking.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're going to this planet, and Anne Hathaway believes we're all going to this planet. We're going to dump a little weight so we can conserve fuel. We can get to that planet. We'll go back and take my lover with me and. We'll go to that
the
planet.
Man she loves, the man she loves is on the closest planet.
He's the scientist on that planet.
Yeah.
Well, they get pretty close, and Matthew decides, okay, we're going to dump the weight.
Yeah, eject us.
Okay, well, guess what? Bye, Anne, you're going to your planet by yourself.
But there's a valid reason. I don't remember what it is right now, but he has to, go in the black hole.
I don't...
There's a reason.
Because he saw that as, possibly his only option to, that was the only thing he could think of to do to try to get back to his kids. And if he couldn't, then he had no reason to live.
Mm-hmm.
Why did he think the black hole was good? Because they needed to get in the black hole
to get the data. The only way to solve gravity. The equation of how to manipulate gravity was to be able
you
to go inside.
You should now understand what my frustration is with this movie.
The only way to solve the equation to manipulate gravity, which is what they'd have to do to move the entire human race to another planet through a wormhole, was to get data from inside of a black hole, which has never been done, and we don't know how. But he talks to Tars, and Tars is like, his robot, theoretically speaking, going into the black hole, we might could actually record the data that we need.
That's what Tars is there to record the data in the black hole.
Right. So, they go in the black hole.
And what is a very, very cool sequence of them flying through the black hole.
Yeah, so that's great. So they get through the black hole.
You see in this, Tars?
So the black hole leads to the time library. That is his daughter's bedroom.
Matthew McConaughey is falling.
I cannot explain. Again, we are assuming you've seen this. And if not,
Quit listening, for the love of God.
It's true. But there is no possible human way I can explain the scene to you. I can't. So, okay, so the time, you know what I'm talking about then if you've seen it. The time library. Here's where the movie, I think at the end of the day, one big problem I have with the movie that explains most of my other problems is that it's a theory of time that is really confusing. It's a theory of time that does not allow for multiple timelines.
That's correct.
It's a theory of time that must be on one continuous timeline. Because the idea is, he's like, how does this get here? It's because somebody, maybe himself, maybe somebody else, I don't know, somebody from the future.
It's not himself.
No, but so somebody from the future knew that this was going to happen and made this place for him to go.
Theoretically.
Oh, it's so stressful.
Whoever, okay. The inside of this black hole is a 3D representation of time in a way that...
Like a Rolodex.
Like, in a way that McConaughey's character could understand time the same way that this fifth-dimensional being, which you don't know, is it evolved human beings who have moved to that new planet and they've just continue to evolve until they now understand how to transcend both space and time.
Basically, is what the movie leads you to believe.
Right, that's what it wants. Yeah, but
and it says that this was it. The black hole or the wormhole is not naturally occurring.
A wormhole is not a naturally occurring.
And that the thing is, when Matthew McConaughey goes into the black hole, whoever they are, gives him this cross section of time that he
can understand,
can manipulate.
But okay, so in this cross section of time, all right, again, and I don't feel like explaining the whole movie.
You have to imagine Matthew McConaughey is in a hallway with nothing but he's behind a bookshelf in his living room.
So yeah. and he is able to communicate with his daughter through the bookshelf, which has been a recurring thing through the movie. The daughter is able to receive
They can't explain it. They say it's gravity, but
like
they don't
books
know.
Fall off of bookshelves and things like that when she's little, so, and they don't know how to explain it.
So, but then he's able to communicate with her through a watch that he had placed there. And she's able to see the thing through the watch, and she's like, it's my dad. Which also, is where I think that there's... That's one of the big narrative leaps, and I really think part of it... We were... From the previous conversation about Anne Hathaway, with love being something that transcends gravity and time, so the love connection between them... Again, this is too complicated. Okay, you know, part of what I think should have happened... I think Interstellar should have been like a 12-part miniseries.
Well, I think that about everything now.
I do. I do also think that about everything. But, I don't even...
Okay, let me break it down. When McConaughey, whenever he decides to pilot this mission, he gives his daughter a watch, and they synchronize their watches, and he says, look, no matter how far away I am, this is... or how far away you are from me, this is the time on Earth, and this will be the time wherever I'm at. And when I get back to Earth to pick you up, to take you to this new planet, we'll compare watches and see where they're at. Well, she is mad and pitches a hissy fit like little kids do.
Can't blame her. Never gonna
see her again. She puts it on the bookshelf in her room, and that is where it stays.
Yeah, I know.
So that watch is on the bookshelf, which is what McConaughey, the timeline that he's, or the library of time that he's in, is just looking from behind her bookshelf into her room. Mm-hmm. And so the watch is there. He gets tars.
He also sees what happened between when he left and
even
her being
30
years old and stuff like that, when she's in her room by herself and when he leaves on the mission and all that. He sees all that before him, and then you get another teary-eyed McConaughey scene that just, it really presses pretty hard.
So he's trying to figure out a way, because Tars has now got the readings.
And Jessica Chastain now is a physicist at NASA.
Yeah, okay. So Tars now has the readings from inside the black hole that were needed. And so McConaughey's trying to figure out a way, how do I communicate this to her at this moment? So and he does that through Morse code on the watch. Now, it is a leap, I guess.
She picks up
the watch and she's like, my dad is communicating with me through Morse code in the watch.
Well, if you think about it, like, when she was little, she was thinking, like, is it aliens? Why are these bookshelves falling off? Why do we have binary code through dust that's falling in my room?
So
there's obviously these events that occur in her room that would lead her to believe there's something weird that happens in here. And there's a reason that this watch is frozen, or not frozen, but there's a reason this watch is glitched up. This would not happen naturally. There's obviously been some kind of gravitational occurrence or something that has thrown it off.
She just comes to the realization in like
2 minutes. She does. She does pretty quick. And it's... That's where I chalk...
I don't even have a...
I don't either, but I kind of chalk it up to the whole... When she's little, she has her ghost that does these things. And then she... If you put the love glue, I guess, to that theory about her dad being the ghost, then it makes sense. It just clicks in her head.
It's not even about the love. It's just about, like, when she's little, there's books that fall off that keep getting knocked off, and she tries to see if there's a message. And before McConaughey leaves, the message that they knock the books, the books that fall off say stay. And so she thinks, so that's a message. And then she leaves her window open during a dust storm. And there's binary code that is...
Leads them to a location.
That leads them to a secret NASA.
Right.
So there's obviously been things that have occurred in that room that would lead her to believe there's possibly something here.
And again, even though... And a lot of this still comes down to, like I said, my disagreements with their... Or my frustration with their theory of time. These people are smarter than I am. Don't get me wrong. Mm. But really it boils down to this. Because I can be like, all right, in this universe, this is your theory of time. I'll accept it.
Theoretically, everything in this is possible.
So here's really the issue. All of that we described takes place in maybe 5 to 10 minutes. Mm. And it is a really rushed thing. And for me, when I'm first watching the movie, I'm like, I do not know what is happening right now. Because it's like this.
It's jarring. It's
so jarring. Yeah. Because there's no transition from like...
You're just from him falling in a black hole thinking, this is the end of the movie. And then...
It's like, I'm in a time library. I'm communicating with my daughter through a watch. It's because we evolved to the fifth dimension. And you're like, what happened?
I mean, you're mentally and partially physically shocked that this is happening. And all this time in the real world, Casey Affleck's farm's burning down.
That was my problem.
The leap
for me never was how she figured out that he had given her this equation through a watch.
I know what he's gonna say.
My thing was, and I do agree. She had just lit her brother's farm on fire.
Their only means of any kind of money or food.
I mean, she had good reason, but still.
She comes outside and yells, it was that, and she's holding a watch.
And then she hugs her brother, and he doesn't snap her neck.
And I thought that he was going to break her.
He does, because by this point in the movie, he's like psychotic.
Yeah, uh-huh. We needed more Casey Affleck. That's another, like, that's one of my few nitpicks. We needed more Casey Affleck in this movie. He's so good.
The world needs more Casey Affleck. He is one of my favorite actors. Yes. He's in my top five.
He is good.
I love him.
When I saw Casey Affleck, when I saw him as, you know, older son, I was like, that guy kind of looks like Ben Affleck. And then the thought hit me in the head, what if the guy on the second planet is Ben Affleck? Then it's Matt Damon, Ben Affleck.
That would be
cool. And then third planet, Tom Hardy. I'm like,
we take one tiny, so unrelated moment, and just has nothing to do with this moment, to recognize the fact that Casey Affleck, who is a critically acclaimed actor, who's an Oscar nominee, appeared in Tower Heist in a minor supporting role.
What are you doing? Who's your agent? Like, what are you doing?
Like, Ben Stiller made it one of his, you know, 18 bad movies
a year.
He
had to be just a good friend. Well,
that's what I
had
think
to be.
Might have been like
that
a,
movie.
We're gonna put you in Tower Heist. It's like The Town.
He's like,
it's like, put me in it, and then they show up, and it's Ben Stiller. It's like,
I think it was more. All right, whatever. I think it was more like Ben Stiller called him and just like, hey, listen, I'm making a movie. I got this bit part. I will owe you forever if you'll please come down here. I got Gabourey Sidibe. She was nominated for an Oscar last year.
Eddie Murphy, nominated for an Oscar. There are a lot of Oscar nominees. Has Ben Stiller ever been nominated for anything? Probably not. Anyway, a lot of Oscar nominees in Tower Heist.
There are.
Was it? That was there a movie in that
was
realm? Yes, that's what
Broderick was in that.
Exactly. I was like, was there a movie in that realm?
Alan Alda from MASH.
Yeah. Weird. Anyways,
has nothing to do with anything. We just thought we'd bring that up for your welcome listening pleasure.
A review in the middle of Interstellar.
F.
Okay.
It's an F.
Okay. So then, but we have discussed that. So she gets it. She goes back. She solves the equation. Another thing I did not like. After she solves the equation, she runs onto up the stairs of Secret NASA, throws her paper over the edge, and yells, "Eureka!"
I wanted to hit her every time somebody does that in the movie. I'm like, you have to take the time to collect all those papers now, you idiot.
Yeah, please, you just made a mess.
You better have run to a fax machine or like a copier first, make copies, and then run and yell, "Eureka!" and then throw your papers.
At that moment, it could have cut to like Adam Sandler as a janitor at NASA and just been like, his face.
Let's talk about the fact that Tower Heist has a 68% of Rotten Tomatoes.
And Interstellar has a 79.
I'm going to watch it now.
Yeah, this definitely is 11, way more than 11% better.
Did you see Tower Heist?
Yeah.
It was not good.
No, it was not.
Okay.
Okay. So yeah, there's that. Now, at some point, the black hole spits.
Matthew McConaughey and Tars out.
Spits McConaughey out.
Which we don't see, though. All we know is
you
now
see
Matthew
him floating
McConaughey wakes up. Well, he's floating
You see him floating his face and you think, again, movie's over.
Yeah.
All of a sudden,
I was ready for it to be by that point. Yeah. I was over it.
So, some space patroller sees him, finds him, collects him, takes him onto the ship, and it is now like, I don't even know. I don't know what year it is. But anyways, it is, what would be safe to say, 80 years 75 to 80 years after he initially left Earth. So he's
Let's put it this way. She's now... Burf is now played by Ellen Bernstein.
Yeah, and she's on her deathbed. So he goes to visit his daughter, who's on her deathbed. He's the same age as he was. Because, I don't know, maybe a year of his life has passed.
Maybe a year or two.
Yeah.
That whole thing.
So he's still the same age. And he walks into his daughter's room while she's on her deathbed. They have a conversation, and she basically tells him to leave.
But lovingly.
No. It's a touching scene. One thing that was funny was he walks into this room. All of her family is in there. So it would his be his grandchildren, great grandchildren.
Doesn't talk to them.
They don't acknowledge you. Like
that's what's also funny. I mean, and she's now this renowned. I mean, she's the savior of the world.
Yeah.
But then nobody gives a crap about Matthew McConaughey, who actually went in the black hole, got the data.
Well, probably because she was like, my dad told me through a watch, and they're like, shut up, weirdo.
We communicated through love and watches.
That's what I think about the watch thing. Okay, say it wasn't Matthew McConaughey. Now she's just a crazy person
who thinks her dad's communicating with her watch. I hope that it is, and the rest of it is her, like, deathbed dream. That, I like the movie more, if that's the case.
Her Alzheimer's dream.
Yeah.
Just,
I am a fan of this movie, if that is the case.
It does, at the end, they are on the space station that you see, and... And it's what I like to think of. If Christopher Nolan could build the universe, he would build it exactly like what
it
looked like.
No. Yes. Here's what it is.
It is so awesome.
You know the scene in Inception where the world folds on itself?
Yeah.
That's what the planet is
Except
now.
It's cylindrical.
Or the space station that they live in.
So, yeah, he's in his bed. He wakes up in his bed, opens his window, like opens the shade, and he sees some kids playing baseball, and they hit it, and it just defies physics.
It might be the coolest scene
to me. It was so awesome.
And so, and then just in case you've stuck with us this long without seeing the movie, let's ruin the whole thing. In the end, he sets off to go find Anne Hathaway because she went to the planet of her lover. Who is dead.
But he doesn't know that.
He doesn't know that.
But yeah. he goes, just knows she's out there.
And she may be alone.
But now they're going to Adam and Eve it up.
And so Interstellar, the sequel, is... No, I'm just kidding. Please, God, never make a sequel
Christopher
to this
Nolan, you know, I say all the respect for you, but I'll watch the movie first. Could be amazing.
Oh, no, I'll be there.
It'll be amazing. I don't know if
it'll be
necessary
terrible,
is not the word.
No. Okay. So we have now spent an hour and basically 30 minutes discussing a movie and a lot of other things.
Yeah,
but
we went off on some tangents.
But some related tangents.
Yeah, some unrelated tangents.
That's a big bull. Okay. We got that.
Yeah, we got that in. Okay. I will say that this is probably the funniest Christopher Nolan film. There was more humor in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
To me, but then it also may be because this is his most dramatic, like, the moments of humor just hit you that much harder.
Definitely. Well, Matthew's just funny anyway, and then Tars is, like, the comedic relief of the whole
thing.
Here's, okay. It is, I will also say, in a lot of ways, it is the least dark Christopher Nolan film. Every other Christopher Nolan film has this like sense of darkness that never leaves. But what's interesting is none of the tension in this movie comes from evil, which I thought was interesting because there's a big presence of evil. Inception, there are definite bad guys in Inception. We'll put it that way. Oh gosh. Okay. I was like, I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, what is
who
it?
Is
there's
the bad
something
guy
in Inception that's something like terrible.
Maul
is the worst villain in any Christopher Nolan movie, and she doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Oh, that was bad.
Yeah. So there, I hadn't really thought about that, but you're right.
Well, I thought about that, and I thought that was like just an interesting, and it shows good filmmaking as well. Again, it's a brilliantly made film until the end.
It's dark, it's not dark, but it's. I could not think of a Batman scene that was even remotely as tense as any four, I guess, in that movie.
No, there's not.
The scene to me, what's been one of my favorite Christopher Nolan scenes from an emotional standpoint is actually the mall scene where you see what happens with Christopher Nolan and Maul. Like when... Whatever.
It's basically his life.
Yeah.
He lived in such...
That man hates women, apparently. Just
Leonardo DiCaprio?
No.
Oh, Christopher Nolan.
Oh, well, Leo DiCaprio, because his previous film, Shutter Island, that wife was crazier than Marvel.
And then... No, actually, I'm not going to bring up the other film I was thinking about. Okay.
Yeah, no, that would ruin the... Yeah.
Okay.
I read your mind.
Yeah. Okay, so that's Interstellar.
That was Interstellar. And that was our... Okay. So...
I will say this, though. Watch it.
Please, it's an experience.
Regardless of anything, watch it.
That you need to experience.
You thought Inception was confusing. Inception is Barney the Dinosaur.
It's a coloring book.
Yeah. I can agree with that.
It is hop on pop.
Yeah.
This is the Iliad.
Yes.
Okay, so hour and 27 minutes. Let's do we have any recommendation, just a little something to give our listener? Anything that you may have seen or listened to or read or anything recently that we will not discuss on an upcoming episode?
Oh, gosh. That just took so much brain energy, and I'm trying to think.
Okay. I'll tell you what we'll do.
Okay, go ahead.
Me and Colby went and saw the biggest movie in North America.
Yeah.
Almost ever at this point. Yeah.
They went and saw every Republican's favorite movie.
Yes. We went and watched Selma. American Sniper. And to me, it gets an A-. I'll say that.
I give it an A-. It had its issues, I guess, yeah. But they were not very bad at all.
Bradley Cooper is unbelievable.
Bradley Cooper is Chris Kyle. I am
He
convinced.
Is not Bradley Cooper in this.
No.
I wonder if he'll be, like, I want to know that Clint Eastwood converted him to being a Republican.
No, he was for the film.
Yeah,
this
I was
movie.
About to say, like,
oh yeah.
If he comes out with like a gun control stance, I think everyone's gonna be like,
mm. See, if it were Daniel Day-Lewis or Christian Bale or Joaquin Phoenix who had been in this role, like they would have run for governor in Texas.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They would have been so method that yeah. But no, it was good. I can't call it great, but I really, really enjoyed it.
It was perfect for the story it was.
Yeah.
And it's not anything just unbelievable. It's not anything that's... I mean, it is amazing, but it's not like super out there.
Yeah.
It does what it needs to do.
It's very straightforward to the point.
It's like I told him. It is what I hoped Zero Dark Thirty would be.
Right, pretty much.
But yeah, Cooper... He is unbelievable, but
and
I didn't
he
wanna,
did get the Oscar nomination.
He
right?
got a nomination, yeah. And it got
Best Picture
nomination. And what's funny is the odds ever since this big box office weekend, because it just broke all the records for the month of January by like $45 million, and it's the highest grossing R-rated movie to weekend release, like highest grossing weekend release for an R-rated movie
because
ever.
because it's like the movie with a bunch of F-words Christians will still go see.
Exactly. Yeah. I said that. I said it does. Okay, this movie comes out in the South. People will go to family reunions at the Carmike 12 to watch American Sniper.
People are like bringing their infants to go see American Sniper.
It's
be
crazy.
Like, that's what America's about, son.
I can't tell you how many students I had talk about.
Son,
this
listen
week.
To me. Some people are sheep. Some people are wolves.
Yeah.
Some people are sheepdogs.
Yeah.
You're not going to be a sheep or a wolf.
I can't tell you how many students I heard talking about and said
yeah.
I went and saw. And then it's like sixth graders.
Oh, I know.
But no, me
and well, the movie, other day I had 2 8th graders being like, yo, we just went and saw Horrible Bosses 2. And I'm like,
good
what's
God.
Wrong with this
what's
nation?
That, American Sniper is dirtier than you would be led to believe.
Than you would think.
Well, Clint Eastwood isn't known for his like clean
no,
track
I know,
record.
But I don't even know that Lone Survivor was as bad as
no,
Sniper
no.
was.
Mm. It depends on your. It's a lot gorier.
Yeah,
a lot gorier.
Wait, which one?
Lone Survivor.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But
I mean language content.
Yeah,
mainly.
But what's funny is the odds. It's nominated for Best Picture, and it now has the second best odds to win, behind Boyhood.
Oh, I thought it was Boyhood Birdman to the death.
I did too until this weekend, but now the Vegas odds have it number 2.
I don't think so.
But the box office rarely... I don't think we have a Titanic situation.
No, I don't think so. Or no.
But
I think that it's going to Boyhood, and if it doesn't, it's going to Birdman.
But it's a phenomenon. It's crazy. Like, we went on a Monday, and the noon showing was sold out. Like, we walked in the door.
The 1 o'clock show sold out while we were... That was the one we were watching.
I read where at Carmike and Dothan over the weekend, every single showing of that movie was sold out.
That's insane.
Which is just, it blows my mind because people just don't go to the theaters like they used to.
And but it's a good movie if you're a patriotic American.
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
It was made for me. Like,
right, yeah, definitely. Oh.
I imagine that your father.
Oh, he will love this. He just hadn't had the chance to go see it yet. But I also wanted to say, before we wrap this up, when the movie, because I didn't know a whole lot about the Chris Kyle story, and I'm not going to spoil what happens, but when the movie ends, it was like a, the mood of the theater, it was the most bizarre. You didn't hear a word.
No,
the credits
that's
rolled.
What everybody's told me, that it was a silent,
well, here,
and
theater.
It was like you were marching out of, like, for a funeral procession.
Exactly.
Like,
it
was just, it
was, okay, through the movie, there's not a moment that really that gives you chills.
Yeah.
The end credits of that movie, where it shows real shot footage of what
him
happens with, Chris Kyle, you are just like, I mean, it's like almost paralyzed. You can't quit looking at it. I mean, it's just, it's amazing.
It is, and we salute you, Chris Kyle. And all of you men and women who
absolutely
fight for us and our freedom and our rights to make this podcast and say whatever we want to. We could say whatever we want to about that movie, but...
By the way, Seth Rogen, you have a lot to thank Chris Kyle for.
No, shut up, Seth Rogen. I defended you to the death over your right to make the interview.
Exactly.
And... I defended you against people who criticized you for it, so how about you come out and be a hypocrite about it?
I'm defending Seth Rogen.
I'm not. Dumb. Like, after the situation you just went through, just keep your mouth shut.
Okay,
but
like,
he didn't. I don't think he said what
He just said it was propaganda.
No, he didn't.
That is exactly what he said.
Not.
He said it was just like the movie that you see in Inglourious Basterds.
No, he did
Bad
not.
Words,
yes,
which
no,
is in a propaganda film.
No, he did not.
Yes, then what did he say, Colby?
He's at two quote, I believe.
Pull it up, please.
I'll pull it up.
Go ahead.
Also,
Michael Moore, shut your mouth.
Well, of course, shut your mouth.
Make sure to shut your mouth.
I agree. Michael Moore should be thrown in a pit. But
kick him out of the country.
Here's what I'm going to say with Seth Rogen. I don't know what your intentions were, but that was stupid.
But
it was kind of stupid.
It was
poor judgment.
But I fully believe that your intentions were not good.
I
want to hear the original tweet. I want to see it.
Here it is. American Sniper kind of reminds me of the movie that's showing in the third act of Inglourious Basterds.
Propaganda film.
But it was, but I watched, I've never seen Inglourious Basterds. Never.
He just compared American Sniper to the movies that Hitler made.
He didn't compare it to me.
Yes, he did.
But then he comes out and says,
our first boat fight.
Kind of reminded me of something else. I actually liked American Sniper. It just reminded me of the Tarantino scene. And when you watch it, you're thinking, this guy's a sniper.
No. Yeah, to apologize for it afterward. That's
exactly
what
it was. If you have to backtrack on the comment, then...
Because everybody started going after
him. Then why did you make the tweet in the first place?
Okay, I'll give you that. He just shouldn't have said it.
Is it just poor judgment or poor wording? Or if he was trying to make a joke, it was still weird.
Okay, yeah. I get as a comic, and there's a bit... It's a complicated situation, but I get as a comic... You make jokes about things people aren't comfortable with, and I don't believe in censorship. I'm against censorship, but I'm also for common sense and understanding that there
and
are
respect.
Things... Just this... respect. Like, this is a man who... You had to know this was going to be taken. Like, use your brain.
Well, and not to be... Like, you had the President of the United States come out and call a movie company a bunch of cowards because they decided not to release your film over... The hoopla that was made about it.
That's the thing.
It just felt so hypocritical to me.
I'm with you.
Because you did the same thing, and just because yours was a comedy doesn't mean that it was in better taste or...
No, let's think
no,
about
exactly.
what that
That's
movie
what I'm saying.
Was. Yeah.
But, and like I said, you had so many people come out and defend, like, take your side and, you know,
no
speak
one would have gone to
you.
See your dumb... You made so much more money off of your dumb comedy for that reason.
You did make more money off of it, I think.
Go ahead.
Yeah, like, it's just... You just had so many people who just came to his and James Franco's defense. Is their right.
Do you know
to
what
make
would have been
movie.
A great tweet for him? He should have said, like, thanks to Chris Kyle, we get to make movies that you wouldn't have seen without the help of North Korea. Like, make a funny joke about your own movie and the situation.
Or,
but
like say, saw American Sniper yesterday, second best propaganda movie. that I've seen since mine came out. Or so, if you just made it a... Like, if it would have been more of a joke than, like, an obscure reference type of deal to a propaganda film, I think if the intentions weren't bad or... What it was just it was poor execution on his part. Whatever the thought was that he was trying to get.
I believe it was stupid. He shouldn't have said it. I don't think his intentions were bad.
I fully do. 100%.
I don't believe he was because he says he didn't mean he's an idiot. Was not comparing. He's kind of an idiot. I don't see it because anyway.
Anyway,
I also but like you know. Let's look back to Donald Sterling. You know, he had some statements that were made, and even whenever he came back and tried to explain them, I didn't quite buy that either. So, the same thing. It's just, I guess it's just the initial way you take it is
I hadn't seen the movie.
Yeah, that's true.
And I did. I watched it after, and if you take out any context of what it is, and you look at the shots... A little bit, but it was a stupid thing to say. I agree.
I think that it was a movie based off of.
But he's getting just as much backlash as Michael Moore is, and he specifically called snipers cowards.
But yeah, okay, no. Here's the difference.
But everybody just has learned.
I was about to say, like, we don't care about Michael Moore.
He quit being irrelevant years ago.
Okay, we really, really need to wrap this up. Yeah. All I've got to say is that time is a flat circle, and
you believe in ghosts, Marty,
Murph,
Marty. Oh, every yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Bye, y'all.
You keep it classy.